cliffcentral.com.
So we've got Best Parliamentarian of the Year. That's one category.
All right.
John Steenhuisen of the DI is in there.
Yeah.
Bantu Holomisa is there. Teralekota Butimanamela.
Okay. Oh, just get on with your job. Outrageous. All right.
Would you like to know about the Debater of the Year?
Mass Debater of the Year. What's the, what are the nominations? The nominations are...
There's Phumzile Fandam.
Okay.
There's Mukelong Sengwa. I don't know who that one is.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Ngabayomizi
Nkwakwa. Okay, I tell you what we do want to know.
I'm pretty sure I butchered that. I'm sorry if you...
Can you imagine if Ben had read
if
that
If you
name?
Know that I butchered it, Russians. I apologize. Imosoto.
All right.
Oh, this is a good one. The Citizen's Choice, right? So, us, the citizens, who this is where we get the power. Oh, there are a lot of contenders in this one. There's Mcebisi Jonas. Mcebisi, of course, is the one famously known for having rejected, what was it, Justice, 600 million or 600,000?
It was a cash suitcase, right?
All right, so Mcebisi in there for Citizen's Choice. Then we've got Ace Magashule. Malusi Gigaba apparently let them know the other day that he is definitely not going to be attending. And who was it? It was Zizi Kodwa who said that politicians should not be celebritized.
I'm with Zizi Kodwa. So, yeah. I never thought I'd say that.
Okay.
There we go.
Oh, Citizen's Choice, also a contender, Hlaudi Motsoeneng.
Oh, is he a politician? Because this is the Politician Awards.
there's
some honesty.
Sorry, is this being hosted by the SABC? Is this the bottom line here?
Let me try and find who the event organizers are, Ben.
It's not, but it will definitely be.
Also, if Saudi wins. Justice already knows about the South African Politicians Award.
Do you know about this?
I know about it. I've had snippets all over the place. But can I just say, guys, I know, it comes... I don't know about this outfit. It sounds very... it sounds interesting. But, other people do this, and they work okay. But it's the credibility of the thing. So,
what do you mean when you say other people do this? Like other countries have similar awards?
Yeah, some countries. So I'll tell you, for example, in the UK, the Spectator magazine, which is quite a... an interesting magazine, but it's got credibility in certain places. They do the same thing, but you have to look at what panel they set up to decide that Mabale is the debater of the year.
Mm.
The problem with this is, where's the science of what you're doing? So the only one I can get is the People's Choice, where it's basically...
It's a popularity contest.
It's a popularity contest. That it's okay to have, you know, if Gigabyte wears nice clothes or is on Instagram and stuff. Well, yeah. You know, if people want to vote for that, that's okay. It's the other stuff. What's the quality assurance in this whole thing?
Justice, you are no fair. You're no fun at all. I mean, do you hear these politicians trying to have some fun and trying to step out of the very dreary light of public servant duties? And, you know, here you are being boring.
I like it. I want it to happen.
I hear cynicism. And listen, we've got lots to talk about this morning. I don't want to waste your time with trivial stuff like the SARPAs.
I could spend the whole morning talking about this.
I just want to know, is there a politician's politician award? Because you know you get the player's player, which is a really big thing, where politicians basically vote for their favorite politician.
Well,
because if they haven't got that, then there is no credibility whatsoever.
Go to the center of the network of patronage and you'll discover who the politician's politician award belongs to.
I think we know someone's going to win by 62%.
And we love him so much. All right, let's get into the burning platform. It is brought to you by Nando's. Every Thursday, Justice Malala comes in.
Halala, my freestata, halala. Halala, Limpopo, halala.
Halala.
Halala Gauteng, halala. Halala KwaZulu-Natal, halala. Halala Western Cape, halala.
And here he is sitting right in front of me with a lot of things to discuss this morning. Justice Malala, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for that intro. That was just so uplifting and beautiful. I feel like finally we're having our first show of the year, you know? And I just feel like that just primed me nicely.
Fantastic.
For this election year.
Speaking of priming, there was an attempt last year during the elections to prime us all to news that made the ANC look good and other parties look bad, to fill the public with divisiveness and political agendas, and to muddy the waters between fact and fiction. And there was a so-called war room. People want to know what Justice Malala makes of paid Twitter this morning.
Can I just say for the record that if you're going to do anything, let's say us here sitting here at Cliff Central and we say, you know what, we're going to do some underhand stuff. The first thing is you've got to make sure that you pay Ben and Mabale and all, you just pay them so that, you know, everyone is happy. You can't do this.
Otherwise they'll turn on each other.
Exactly. I mean, why should I not believe? So we all know what, basically, according to Silka Bolani, who is a communications expert, she and other communications companies, and there's a whole list you can see there, were commissioned to do certain things, and essentially to turn the conversation away from the negativity of the ANC, particularly in Gauteng, the negativity around President Jacob Zuma, by tweeting, by setting up websites like the South African and so forth and so forth. Now, some of it happened. Some of it apparently didn't happen, but it looks like some of it really happened. So Buyisani Ndlozi, the EFF, has said that there was a poster that they found, I think it was around Tembisa Township, with a picture of Julius Malema with a gun on it, for example. Now, in the court papers, she says, you know, this is some of the stuff that was supposed to be produced, and she says it never happened, but actually there it is, and someone has taken pictures of it that we've seen around. So it looks like it happened. The big problem is you must pay the people. Pay the people. Because now we have a situation that's a bit like a lover who's scorned and turns around and says, well, I'll show you, and starts spilling the beans about, you know.
But also get your story straight, because we've got Zizi Kodwa, who says none of this is true.
Yeah.
It's all made up. We've got Shaka Sisulu, who's saying, well, I did meet with Sitle Bolani, but we were volunteers. There was no money. Then you've got Bo Mbindwane, who says, this is a Shaka Sisulu thing. It has nothing to do with the rest of us. And they're all hanging each other out to dry. And then poor old Ignatius
Jacobs,
who's also been hung out to dry, because he's the one who admitted, yes, there was a war room.
Who also signed that, I will give you, instead of the 2.2 million, I'll give you the 1 million rand and let's say thank you and goodbye.
Yeah, and then you've got Sihle, who comes out and everybody's saying, well, she's lying. The aforementioned people are saying she's lying, but she ended up with $1 million in her account for no good reason.
Well, I mean, can I just say, please, guys, I'm volunteering here. Can I see $1 million in my account quickly now?
Sure. Because people go around giving volunteers $1 million just because they like it.
Just, you know, as one does. I think I might go out and volunteer this morning at the ANC.
And some strange logic there, because they paid her $1 million, according to all of the above mentioned. They paid her $1 million in order to avoid going to court. But then they say they want to go to court to prove that there isn't any black ops paid Twitter operation.
And so the key thing here is, are they going to demand what they've paid already then? Because that would be interesting if they did that. But I think that's I think this story's got legs. I think it's going to continue. From what I've seen and from exactly the contradictions that you've mentioned between all the players and the ANC, one, we know certain things. Ignatius Jacobs is not a Johnny come lately to South African politics. A long time ago, when Peter Mokaba was the president of SAICO, Ignatius Jacobs in the late 80s, early 90s was one of the Gauteng leaders of the Southern Transvaal Youth Congress. He went on, he went into government. He was an MEC in MEC for Youth Affairs, in fact, in that first 1994 Tokyo Sekgwale administration. He's done a lot of things. And that he's ended up back inside the ANC as an administrator. This is not someone who's going to just sign an agreement with someone who did not do anything. This guy has been exposed to agreements, contracts in government, in other spheres of life. He has done, he's been dabbled in business, I believe. It boggles the mind that people can say, absolutely not. No, we were volunteers. Oh, this, oh, that, oh, that. Mm. So I think there is some credibility to the claims made by Ms. Bolani. But there's a bigger thing here. How are we going to conduct elections in the future? How are we going to police them in the future? If this is what the ANC contemplated doing and to some extent did.
And failed in, because the end result, and this is what I said this morning to Mabale and Ben and everybody else, you do this, you do something nefarious, you try to deceive the public, you have a dirty tricks campaign, but it doesn't even result in the votes that you would aiming
for. It doesn't work. People must go and watch, I think it was made around 2002, a movie called Wag the Dog.
I remember that.
Wag the Dog is about exactly this, a dirty operation to essentially get all of us to think in one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But we have an electoral code in this country, and the electoral code has sanctions for people who indulge in this kind of thing, who partake in this sort of thing, and political parties in particular. I think it would be interesting for Mbuyiseni Ndlozi or Julius Malema, Floyd Chivambu, Musi Maimane, John Steenhuisen, the lady you were talking about, Phumzile Van Dam, others, to say, if this is what happened with the ANC and what it did, perhaps they should be reported to the Electoral Commission for an investigation into nefarious activities. What else happened? How far is one prepared to go to skew the outcomes of elections? I think if we don't subject this to an independent scrutiny, we'll continue to have the ANC say, no, this didn't happen, and so forth and so forth.
Wow, but so you're actually saying we should take this further and do a proper investigation of it. It's not good enough that it's been outed publicly.
I think it's not good enough, because what are we saying is the result? What happens next when there's a by-election maybe in Johannesburg and Mabale thinks, you know, I'm tired of the traffic lights not working. I'm going to run as a local councillor. And I think, how dare she? Mm. Now, how easy is it for some of our bright young minds here in this building to produce a poster or some pamphlets, and I go throw them about saying, oh, Mabale took money underhand from so-and-so.
Yeah.
There you go. You know, and then someone tweets or retweets it and so forth and so forth.
And then it's fake news.
You know, we need to jump onto this thing and say an election is coming up in 2019. That election will be a bit like the election we had in 2016.
Yeah.
Where certainly here in Gauteng, can anyone say the ANC is going to be running this place again? Will we have David Makura or another ANC leader being the premier of Gauteng? My view, if you were to ask me right now, is that it's over. That we will have either a DA or an EFF premier of Gauteng in 2019. So that sort of desperation, will people do this again? In the run-up to the 2019 election, because there is no doubt that the ANC is now under threat. Will there be another Sihle Bolani? Will there be another Shaka Sisulu putting stuff together for tweeting and so forth?
Right.
And is it above board? Is it aligned to what we've envisaged in the electoral code of conduct? And I think that's something we have to talk about, because what happened, let me just say, the issue about that, those posters that would have had Julius Malema with a picture of a gun, those were meant to damage, besmirch, yeah, the EFF and paint them in that soir très fort kind of mold, that these guys will come in and they will be, this is a Mugabe-esque kind of country. Now, that is just the idea of doing that. That is so problematic. And so I think we need to call on the IEC to stand up and do something about it. We can't have it repeated.
That's an interesting point of view, because if besmirching reputations like Julius's were part of the plan of the people involved in this Dirty Tricks campaign, then they mustn't complain now when their own reputations are being besmirched. I saw Shaka Sisulu's comments in his first statement after he'd been telling people, no, I'll definitely be on that trending show that evening. He didn't pitch. Then he was quiet on Twitter, said he didn't have airtime. You know, all these buying time tactics. He's really damaging himself hugely here. And then his statement about how...
Oh, the 50 million didn't go far.
Yeah, the 50 million. And he says that's nonsense, by the way. Mm. And he also says that this is an attempt to besmirch him and his family name and the ANC. Mm. But, you know, if it is, and you besmirched other people like Julius Malema in your campaign, and that was part of what you guys were tasked to do, then the chickens have come home to roost, and none of us are going to feel sorry for you.
No, I think very few people are feeling sorry for all these players who claim now that they are under attack and so forth and so forth. Quite frankly, if you look at the Twitter timeline of people like your Bo Mbindwanes, who essentially set themselves up as a force to besmirch other people's names. Mm. This is it. It's blown up in their faces, and it's blown up spectacularly. So I can't say I have much sympathy. I can't say that it's particularly.
You're not sitting there feeling sorry for them.
No. But I do think we need to go formal with this whole thing and make sure that other people know that they can be caught, even if they pay the people that they contract to do this sort of thing. But that it will come back and it will have a big impact. No. There's another paid Twitter story that we didn't touch on, and it's the fake accounts that have been doing the rounds.
Yeah, EWN and ENCA and the Sunday Times, among others.
Among others, HuffPost, and so forth and so forth. But what they do is they'll take a picture of some scuzzy guy in a suit and tie sitting there and superimpose a picture of Firial Hafaji, who used to be the editor of City Press, the editor of Mail and Guardian, who's an editor-in-chief at the Huffington Post, and superimposed on him, essentially her sitting on him, and put their pictures there. It's very bad Photoshop, but it's it gets put on and it gets tweeted and retweeted and retweeted and retweeted and again and again and again.
Right.
The Daily Maverick website has a fantastic story this week about how they took a bit of an IT social media wizard and said, what's going on with these? Mm-hmm. And he did a study in which he looked at what are the patterns of these tweets. And these patterns point to a campaign that says, yeah, there's an attack on the Gupta family, and to deflect from that attack, we're going to have our own campaign that says white monopoly capital, led by Johann Rupert.
Well, can we get into this, because this is something I read. You had a very fiery column this week, which you said, I mean, in it you've said many things that I think a lot of people have suspected, but you were very vocal and forceful about what you believe is actually going on here.
Mm. Yeah, my view is that all that whole Twitter storm and that manufactured outrage around, treasuries are taking the Guptas and so forth, all that stuff is really to deflect from the real issues that are in front of us. Let me tell you what, in my view, is happening. On Sunday, President Jacob Zuma was in Burgersfort in Limpopo. And he said all kinds of things. And at the end, he said, Amandla. And people responded, Dibuga.
Oh.
Dibuga means books for our listeners.
Yeah.
So
it's usually aware to.
Yeah, so it's usually
response.
It's power, you know, to the people. All power to the people. Amandla, away to Mata Karuna. This time he says, Amandla. They say, Dibuga. Amandla, Dibuga. And that tells you something.
Wow.
People were saying, we love you, we love the ANC, we are here, we've turned out. But where are the books? Books have not been delivered to schools in Limpopo. They've been delivered in a haphazard fashion, But they haven't been distributed properly. There are still some 30,000 kids who have not been placed in schools. Now, that is a problem that I want to deal with right now. I think all of us should be dealing with that problem. What happens when you have a problem like that? You should be coming out and saying, as a government, we are on top of this. We are, the systems are there. And when you listen to someone like Panyaza Lesufi, without a shadow of doubt, you get the clear idea that this guy is doing his best to solve this problem. He doesn't say, it's because of apartheid, A kid doesn't have a book today.
Yeah.
And my responsibility, if I was running this country, would be to make sure that this kid has a book today, and at the end of the year, he passes so that he goes to the next grade. And after 12 years of schooling, he should be able to go to university. Yeah. That is my problem. But what you have with these campaigns, and last week we spoke a bit, well, we said we'd speak a bit about APSA and the APSA bailout, is that instead of saying, Dibuka, we say, but you know, in 1984, there were no books in black schools. Well, great. But am I going to sit here and compare myself to the apartheid regime?
Is that the standard?
Is that what this was all about, to sit here and say, no, they didn't provide books. And so it's okay if I don't provide books. Is it okay to say, well, they stole money, so why don't we go for them? When we're going for Jacob Zuma for building himself a castle on the hill in Gandla.
Right.
This, for me, is where the fundamental breakdown in South Africa comes around. So what's happening with that Twitter-ish storm that's been going on, and the fake accounts and so forth, is essentially an attempt to deflect from the real issue. You have the public protector issuing a comprehensive report that shows Des van Rooyen going to the Gupta home 12 times in the days before his before his appointment. You have forensic evidence, phone records that show Brian Molefe calling Atul Gupta many times, and then coming out and saying, there's a Shebeen in Saxenold.
And crying
and all that. All these things you've seen, who is benefiting from all this? It's one family. Who is being hard done by this? It's the citizens, the taxpayers of South Africa. Let's deal with this. But essentially what we have now, with the APSA Bankop, with other issues, you see what they did under apartheid. It's terrible. And so let's go after that.
It's straw men and red herrings.
It's red herrings all the way.
They're trying to confuse us and to sow disarray and to try and this is almost like paid Twitter without the money.
It's
the grand philosophy.
It's a grand philosophy.
Just keep distracting them.
Exactly. So what you have is exactly this situation where instead of talking about the kid without the book, instead of talking about the kid who is walking miles and miles to a school and begging to go in, and they tell them, no, it's full, and go home and maybe try again in the next school, in the next village, and so forth. It's distracting us from the real problems that we face and should be solving every day. And it's, they did it too. Well, you know, quite frankly, if they did it, I've always known that they were corrupt. I've always known that they are underhand.
Right.
These are not people I want to... This is not the best of us.
Yeah.
But I think that's the philosophy that's going on now. Create as many diversions as possible. Deflect, deflect, deflect. And you'll find yourself, you'll profit from it. I think that's...
That's what that whole Bank Core ABSA thing was. It was just another distraction.
It's just another distraction. You know, the key thing here is, let's look at it. So over time, between 85 and 95, the Reserve Bank gives Bancorp loans. ABSA buys Bancorp and pays some money for it. The capital on the loans is returned. The interest is not. A bounty hunter, a former MI6 agent, comes in, speaks to the head of intelligence in South Africa at the time, Bilima Setla, and says, I can get some money back for you guys if you pay me £100,000 a month over 6 months. And when I get the money, you give me 10% of it. Bilima Setla says, okay, give us the preliminary report, and we'll take it from there. Takes the report, takes it to Trevor Manuel, Nelson Mandela, Thabo Mbeki. Thabo Mbeki and Trevor Manuel say, geez, this could cause some problems in the system, with the banking system, if we are seen to be going after these guys. So they say, let's formalize it. So they go to Judge Heath at the Special Investigating Unit and say, investigate and give us an opinion. He comes back to them. He says, look, this thing was illicit. It was immoral. It may even be illegal. But I don't think we can get the money back. And the people who actually benefited were policyholders at Sanlam. Not the corporation itself, the policyholders themselves. And so I'm not sure that we can get away with it. Thabo and Trevor Manuel think, no, let's do something else. So they ask Judge Dennis Davies to set up a panel and do another investigation. That panel comes back and says, definitely illicit, definitely immoral, but you can't act. You'll destroy your own financial system. You might bring a run on ABSA and on the banks, and you'll be sitting with the same problem that Bancorp sat with in 86, because that was also a political problem when BW Botha failed to deliver on promises to reform the South African political landscape, and the rand plummeted and banking stocks plummeted and triggered a situation where Bancorp was not liquid, and so that's why they
had to loan them the money.
So two investigations by the ANC-led Democratic government said, you know, it's what it is. But, you can't go after the money.
But Justice, this sounds so arcane. It sounds like it's very... this is hardly controversial. I mean, it's the kind of thing that happens in financial systems. It's not necessarily the right thing, but it seems that... It's a minor infraction rather than a major infraction, even if there were monies that were meant to have exchanged hands in terms of interest payments. But someone clearly said, go and dig up dirt wherever you can find it so we can create a stir. And it speaks very well of the ANC government pre-Jacob Zuma that they held these investigations. They did it the right way. They did it the clinical way. They did it the
scientific
correct.
Inquiry.
They were looking for... whether there was really something that was, whether there was smoke and fire, blood, yeah. but you know, whatever you want to call it. But what's happened post then is a whole number of years later, this has been made to seem as if it was money taken away from South Africa by the old regime so that it would get headlines. And it did.
It did. The key thing about that is that, so then you have pressure from, you know, not the Gupta types, from Hoffman in Cape Town.
Not Andile Mqwithama.
No, not Andile. So Andile is taking the credit that I got this thing going and so forth. It was
Paul Hoffman.
It was Nozwick. It was Sylvia von Vollenhoven from the SABC, who actually made a documentary which the SABC wouldn't show, interestingly enough. Excuse me. But then what you have is the public protector writing this. I'm interested in Thuli Madonsela giving a speech to the Cape Town Press Club and saying, by the way, I'm not going to comment whether the final recommendations, the findings in this report on Bankop Absa are what I wrote, and whether what she had concluded and what the new public protector has concluded and written are the same or not. Of all the questions that she was asked in that, after she gave that speech, it's this one question that she wouldn't answer. And I'm quite interested to see what her version of the conclusion was and what the new version is.
Doesn't that also speak very highly of her?
I think it speaks very highly of her.
That she's not prepared to get into mudslinging with her successor.
Yeah.
Whereas her successor was only too happy within days of taking office to start slinging mud back at her.
To jump in. I think she may even have, she said she didn't lay charges, but she has opened a case of leaking that audio with President Zuma. Anyway, so the point about it is, we now have the public protector's preliminary report, which has apparently been handed to the Reserve Bank, to APSA itself, and a few of the other people who are implicated. Funny enough, Paul Hoffman, who is the initial complainant, was not given the report. Why is that? Anyway, this report is now supposed to be finalized. People will respond to whatever the public protector has asked, and it will be released, hopefully. And we'll see what the final result is.
And we'll see if it was all a storm in a teacup or whether it's an actual story.
Exactly. But without a shadow of doubt, your Andile Mqwithama and others will be making hay out of it too.
Well, we know that's a one-man party that he leads. I mean, it's technically about 5 or 10 people. But
well, I mean, I think one should always count his fax machine as well. So there's two.
He's also compromised. I mean, this is a guy who's just really looking for a political home. I almost feel bad for him because Andile used to be a part of the EFF. The EFF decided there was too much baggage, and they threw him off into the sea, and now he's been drifting for a long time. And then Jacob Zuma's people saw an opportunity to take on an activist of a kind, someone who would stir the pot and make some noise, which he absolutely does, and he does it very well. And now he's defending the Guptas and defending
Jacob Zuma.
And it all works out well for Andile, because he's finally, you know, got some interest and he's got some attention and he might have even got some money, who knows?
Well, I mean, I look forward to him telling us who paid for those big adverts that he put out in the Sunday papers for his campaigns. Because, you know, follow the money, and I think we'll get to an interesting place. So,
speaking of following the money, your final point for today, and there's so many others that we could get to in another couple of these episodes, but we've got time. It's only January. The last one is about Commissioner Patlani. And how many cars does this man have? I mean, we know he has an 80,000 rand sound system at home, which is incredible. You know, if you had one, you're in the media. And if someone gifted that to you, you'd still have to declare it.
Yes.
And certainly it would appear in your taxes. But this, let's imagine that he got this gift of the sound system. Did he also get a Land Rover Discovery, Range Rover Sport, Toyota Hilux Bucky, and VW Amarok, Bucky, as gifts from people who were just pleased to give him a good deal?
The problem...
I mean, four cars.
Which one shall we take today?
How many cars have you
I
got,
like
Justin?
A Bucky. Yeah. I like a Bucky.
Today the Bucky, tomorrow the Range Rover. So no. What do we got here?
I think, you know, there's been... So you spoke rightly about the raid on his house by iPad looking to verify the existence of the sound system. Now it emerges that there are these four cars. Now, excuse me, the key thing about these so-called lifestyle audits. So let's say SARS starts thinking, Justice or Ben has been paying tax, but maybe why is he driving a Maserati and a Porsche Cayenne and a Porsche this and so forth and so forth. Then they look at, but he earns 27,000 rand a month. But he can afford 4 1 million rand cars.
Average repayment must be about 12-13 grand at a minimum.
At a minimum.
So that means he can at a maximum afford two of those cars, but that means he's got no pocket money left afterwards.
The guy ain't going clubbing on Friday.
Yeah.
So what is going on here? What is this audit? It's a lifestyle audit. So the police commissioner, the acting police commissioner, and can I just say, I like this guy. I think this guy is doing a good job. And I wish him luck. I hope he continues. Mm-hmm. But when you have four cars of average, 500,000
at least
each.
I mean, the Range Rover Sport's about 1.2 million all on its own.
There you go. So the key question then becomes, how do you square that with what you're earning? Do you have outside interests, and have you declared them? And I think
he says he's very careful with his money, and he's been investing.
Okay, and I think that's great.
So has he cashed out his investments? There must be a record of this.
Yeah. So I think for those out there who are in the public space who do things and so forth, people need to be careful about what they're doing, because this thing, there's a great song. I think it's UB40. There's a rat in the kitchen, da-di-da, something like that.
Yeah. Let me see if I can find that for you.
I think it was UB40, but I'm a bit old. But, you know, Gareth, at the end of the day, it just doesn't look good when you've got four cars in the garage and you're earning, or have been earning, the salary of a police constable, then general, and so forth and so forth. I don't mean to impugn his name.
No, and you know what? It's sad, as you say, that this is a guy who was quite an effective public servant. He was quite an effective police commissioner, even though acting police commissioner.
Yeah.
It would be even more sad if South Africa's lost the services of a good man because he got greedy.
Exactly.
It would be very sad. So let's hope that there is some very, very sensible explanation for all
of
this.
Yeah. No, I'm hoping so. But he, of all people, should know that, you know what? It ain't looking good. And that's a problem. But this guy has been fantastic since he came on. He's a real voice of reason. He's a professional. He's all that. But there's a rat in the kitchen.
Thank you, Justice. The Burning Platform.
Absolute pleasure.
It is brought to you by Nando's every Thursday. Justice Malala pops by, shares his insights with us, and we are much the richer for it. Every week you get to hear the analysis and the thought and the ideas, and then you get to read his stuff as well, weekly. And you get to see his show on TV, The Justice Factor. I heard you had Julius on this week.
Yes, I had Julius on. Can I just say, guys, I mean, Julius gives a lot of advice to a lot of people. Mugabe must go, Zuma must do this, and so forth. But that guy, I mean, we should have him, you should have him on the show. And just, he must tell all of us, help us all with his exercise regime and his diet. I mean, the guy's looking totally different. He's looking good.
He told me, because I had him on, what was it, towards the last half of last year. And he said, first of all, his wife's been instrumental because she has told him no more sugar. So she helps him with his meals.
Yeah.
So he's cut sugar out of his diet completely. No fizzy drinks, none of that stuff. No takeaways. He's very strict about that. And he said it's all about intake because he doesn't get a lot of time to exercise.
Yeah. Okay. So it's the food.
It's food. It's no exercise. Food. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he does some exercise, clearly, but he's looking great. And I heard that you could barely get a word in edgewise with him on the Justice Factor.
Look, he'd had a two-hour press conference on Monday. So when he came on the show, he wasn't stopping. He was going. But it's always fun interviewing Julius Malema. It's always great fun because he gives it and he's very happy to take it.
And you know where I have to give him credit this week too is he said something which I think a lot of people always thought was a little bit one of the positions that he held that were maybe a little untenable. Was his support for Robert Mugabe, and you mentioned it briefly now, but he has said he thinks it's time for the old man to go.
Yeah.
Which is a kind, gentle, soft approach to saying to him, look, you know, we can't carry on being supportive of this kind of dictatorship, because I think Julius looks at our own pragmatic situation with our president and goes, well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So at least there isn't cognitive dissonance anymore.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? We should be grateful for people who, and he said it again, people have really been gone for him and said, you said this public protector is fine and so forth.
And he admitted.
And he said, you know what? We made a mistake.
And
we
they're taking steps, he said, to rectify the decision.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see what steps they take. But I admire that you people can say I'm sorry.
And can change their position.
Yeah.
I've always regarded that as the mark of intelligent people.
You know what? The facts have changed.
Right.
New evidence has come to light.
All right, Justice. So, what are you going to drive home? The Range Rover Sport? The
I like the Bucky.
The Hilux.
Okay. I like the Bucky.
Very good. Thank you. Justice Malala, everybody. Brought to you by Nando's. It is 10 minutes away from 8. We're going to speak to Prof. David Block. We've got some stories in the news. Ben's got some sport for us. Lots of things to get in. CliffCentral.com.